Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Enterprise Dish. It is mid-July, which means there is always just so much going on in the content world, but we've got some war stories for you, too. We got some updates, and we got some other stuff, and we also have Mr. Rick Vanover. How's it going, Rick?
Hey, Brad. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. It is exactly middle of July. It's the 15th. It's 12 o'clock, right in the middle of the day. Good call.
Yeah, week is half over, month is half over. And
that's weird.
It is.
Yeah. Anyway. Just get this year over and we'll be fine with things, right?
I think we can all agree with that, that 2020 is going to be the one where they just kind of, you know, take out the pencil and be like, yeah, nothing really happened.
Yeah, not my best work.
Yeah, exactly. So a couple quick things on the agenda. One, if you haven't patched your servers, there was a pretty big wormable bug from a 17-year-old issue, I believe with relating to DNS. It's always DNS. And it's wormable, and it's impacting your servers, and it's opened you up to all sorts of bad things. So be on the lookout and be really considering patching that. And that's kind of the big news of the week.
And here's the thing about that, especially when you talk about multi-year-old vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. We should be patching anyways, you know. And this just bugs me that it's still an issue today. You know, automated patching is a burden. I know there's downtime. I know there's operational bits. There's network traffic to think about, but it just shakes my head. And I know we talked about this last time with ransomware, or one of the other times with ransomware, but I have data that indicates that around 13% of ransomware comes in through vulnerabilities.
Wow.
So think about that. And if you think about bad remote access, mm-hmm. and if you think about phish attack, so it's like 56%, 20-some%, and then 13%. I may or may not be remembering the numbers, but between phish, software updates, and bad remote access, that's 97% of the ransomware entry point.
Wow.
So a paper I just wrote on that, I kind of went into detail on that. So get the patching right. If anything, just, you know, those vulnerabilities. Mm. But then when you think about ransomware modes of entry, that's a big deal.
Yeah, no, it really, really is. So that is, there's your top tip of the day.
Yeah.
Right.
Updating stuff, right? It's like yesterday I was updating Windows Explorer, which was, or Windows Azure Storage Explorer. So that was a big, it was, you ever get a little update that is kind of a big deal? Mm-hmm. You ever have those types of things? So Azure Storage Explorer, I don't know if you or maybe the listeners use it, if you use Azure a lot. But the update to, I think it was 1.14.1 came out on the 14th, go figure, with that type of date, had a really, really small, but I think a very, very big difference around copy and paste for blob files or blob objects from files on your computer to blob. And it's just simply, it's the simplest thing, but you can copy your content from your local PC or wherever you're running Azure Storage Explorer, whatever file content goes into the copy buffer can be pasted as a blob object. Now, that might seem like not a big deal, but I think it's kind of a big deal. I was like so happy about it. I even jumped on a blog immediately and wrote it up. But blob files, blob objects are different, right? So Azure Storage, a new way to consume it. If you think about migration, even onesie twosie migration, I think that was a really kind of a big deal. So whether it's updating DNS to fix a problem or updating tools to get more capabilities, you know, keeping updated is just part of the game, I think.
Interesting. That's a good little tip there. We got
And it's like the weirdest thing about Azure Storage Explorer is that's one of the few, I don't say few, but that's a tool that I use, a Microsoft. It's not really a product, it's a tool.
Yeah.
Okay. They, the proverbial they, do a lot on GitHub to indicate changes, bug fixes, new capabilities and stuff. And that's actually really the best way to get updated on this. Because a lot of times you go into tools or any product, do an update. You know, just having an update called 2020-07-15 doesn't really tell you much.
Right.
But the way the GitHub requests to update these tools work, you know exactly what's been fixed and what exactly has been introduced as a new capability. So kind of a different way to think about consuming software updates, but I thought that Azure Storage Explorer kind of rocked it here this month.
Nice. That's a good little tip for you. There's too many tips. We're
tips.
Doing
too tip many me tips. In the app. You're going to tip me in the app? That'll be, oh, that's great. I take PayPal.
Well, as we promised last month, because some people really gave me some good feedback wanting to hear war stories or triage events or things that just go wrong. And I'm going to kick it off with one of my favorites. And it's not the squirrel eating the fiber line. This was this took place in Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina. I won't say the specific company, but I'm sure if somebody knows my history well enough, they could figure it out. So they had a data center. They had a data center, a proper data center. You know, they had the room, the cooling and everything, the backup power and all that stuff. And power to the location was cut. Power cut. So properly, they had backup generators, you know, and they kicked on right away. I think there was just like a very minor blip in the radar of availability. Like everything was going to plan. Except they had one minor little problem, Rick. Just
no fuel. No fuel.
No, not even no fuel. They had properly maintained the generators. Everything from that aspect was good. The problem came into is they didn't really look at what they were powering and what they, and more specifically what they weren't powering with the generator. So they had this great data center that was online, back up and running. Nobody could get into the building.
No, oh, like the access control system wasn't powered.
Was not powered. So they could see like the server room, but they could not, like, you know, they go to swipe the key card and like it doesn't open. The door's always locked, and they had no way to get in there.
And no one was in there before, so correct, nobody like, let me out. None of that. Okay.
None of that.
Wow, so I've got stories. Yeah.
How they got around it. Because the power outage was something like, if I remember correctly, like 12 hours or something. It was long enough that people needed to get in there and just do maintenance and monitoring and other things. They ended up just quite literally ripping the door off.
Could they have tried over the ceiling, or was it a...
I don't know the full... All I got was the triage report of what happened. So I'm literally reading about what had happened, the failover, because we were doing compliance work and making things. And then I'm reading this through and they're like, unable to access location. I'm like, what are you guys talking about? So I pick up the phone and call the guy and he's like, you're not going to believe this. And he's like, we couldn't get the door open. So we had to literally take the door off.
And you know, if you think about it, those are not like high draw power systems.
Right.
Right. It's just a matter of, it could have been, oh, you should have plugged in here versus plugging in there. Right, it's likely a computer and then like a facility system. Mm-hmm. If in most situations, right. Yeah. The only exception is if there's like a hand reader, that device may have its own power source and that mm-hmm. becomes a little bit more complicated. But a booger. That's a rough one.
I mean, that's one of those ones you're like, yeah, like we did it all right. And like, you know, people could remote in and see like everything was, and then somebody just goes to try to like either change a drive or just whatever, just, you know, just general maintenance. Yeah. And like, wait a minute, we can't, mm-hmm. we can't get into the server room.
Well, yeah, I don't have anything that kind of interesting, but I have a different kind of pre-outage situation. Mm-hmm. So back to the history, right? How much time do we have? I could go all day on this topic. In the 2000s, mm-hmm. I spent basically my whole career of that decade as a, I don't want to say consultant, but in the supply chain industry. And I was with a large supply chain logistics firm. I got a story for every city, right? Where distribution centers, airport baggage systems, post office sortation facilities, mm-hmm. e-commerce facilities. I was on the team that would deploy the computer software that would like talk to the conveyors and make stuff move and, you know, tell you that your order is shipped, right? Especially, you know, 10 plus years ago, it's kind of hard to do. Now you just take it for granted, but I was on the cutting edge of that. And one story I have was, you know, this is kind of funny because this is a very interesting profession now, but it was even more interesting then in a way where, you know, they'd be out there with their stopwatch and their calculator mm-hmm. and, you know, calculating rate and things like that. I had very interesting conversations with one of the largest retailers. They're like, you're 1% off a rate, you know, and this is supposed to move 220 packages per minute and it moved 216. And I look at them and I'm like, you want me to do this again? You know, that type of thing. Because like staging up those tests are very hard. And it's not just for 1 minute. It has to be sustained for like 20, 30 minutes. That's a lot of boxes. Anyways, he's like, look, we have 132 distribution centers in North America. And if you're off by 1%, that's 1.3 distribution centers. And they each cost $40 million. Do it again. So, you know, I was like, well, okay. Yeah, you made your case. Pretty short. Anyways, one particular client, a different client, had, you know, it was always tough. It was always easy when you're building a new facility. Mm-hmm. But if you're reconfiguring an existing facility, you had a different set of challenges.
Yep.
The one that I had was the client who didn't quite believe what our electricians said we needed. So let me explain. I'm not an electrician, mm-hmm. okay? But I do know that these conveyor systems took a lot of power. I mean, still they're efficient. They have these like zones where if there's nothing on it, the motor will turn off. If something's coming, it'll ramp up. Mm-hmm. But let's just say we told them, oh yeah, we need 480 volt three-phase power or some very high amount of power. Mm-hmm. This is not something like at a home you would have, businesses would have it, you know, industrial deployments would have three-phase power. But whatever it was, we said we needed this. And they said, oh, there's no way you're going to need that much power. So, of course, we turn it all on and all the lights went off. And this was not an easy fix during this situation mm-hmm. because it was an existing location. And by them saying no at one point to then having to redeploy the electric, let's just say there was floor that had to be cut up and we're talking poured concrete and multiple weeks delay. So that was kind of funny. But, you know, it comes down to design, right? Yeah. How do you design things to avoid unplanned failures, whether mm-hmm. it's powering the security system or powering the whatever system? I had a situation once where we couldn't get into a computer room like that, and the solution involved going over the ceiling. So that was an interesting day in 2011. So
the only other good sort of, and this I think might be more of a clerical error potentially, was a data center or a data room. I think, I don't know if you call it a data center, but it had like four or five servers, not a huge operation, but definitely, you know, it was part of an office. It was a server area. It was a place that got compliance audit and all that good stuff. One minor clerical note, this place was outside of London, if I remember correctly. I know it was definitely in the UK. I believe it was London. And we got a report of an incident, premature drive failures and all that stuff. And we were curious why it kind of came over to us or whatever. The challenge they had was a miscommunication on what the optimal temperature should be in Celsius or Fahrenheit. People in the UK assumed it was in Celsius. People in the US assumed it was Fahrenheit. And the room got a little hot. And so.
Oh, boy.
Yep.
Wow. So that would accelerate said plan. But that brings up an interesting point. Yep. You know, what constitutes a data center, right?
Yeah.
And I was talking to somebody about this one time because I've talked to a lot of IT pros that support mm-hmm. retail operations or edge operations, robo operations. And the test that I kind of came up with is a two-part test. One, if there is a computer or device that someone does not use as their workstation, it may be a data center. It can be that simple, right? And the other test was if someone's regular device also is directly responsible for other people's usage. Example, you might have a beefy workstation that also runs an app with SQL Express or something like that. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, when you have to get that specific, because if you think about compliance and what you need to back up and what you need to manage and monitor, it can be stuff under a shelf that still happens. And I've even spoken to some organizations that support retail operations with like a two-host Hyper-V cluster that is just everything they need to run the store, boom, done. That's mm-hmm. it. But is that a data center? Well, it sits up by the video system, right? Well, that kind of starts to feel like a data center, right? Yeah. You know, so it starts to – the test is pretty significant. I remember reading that the Army or the Department of Defense one time had trouble defining what is a data center, right? Because it's like they didn't know how many they have because they didn't really have a definition that works. But I have a funny predictive drive failure mm-hmm. situation. Okay. So back in the day when I was in the supply chain industry, I had this client. I got to be specific because I have to be generic. If I'm too specific, it can be determined. But I had this client that was in the parcel and freight organization. And I'll just say they were in Latin America, okay, south of here. And this was before virtualization, the way we would deploy these solutions, two parallel servers. And they would have like four hard drives with RAID 5 and a spare. Okay, so a good resilient approach, totally separate pairs of inventory. And the way that we used to deploy these solutions is we'd deploy and we'd provide support. A couple of years later, we'd say, hey, you're due for an update, upgrade. Let's refresh. Let's modernize the equipment. We had a cycle, life cycle for it. But the customer kept saying no, kept saying no, kept saying no, you know, to save money. Mm-hmm. Then they called in deep desperation. And, I speak a little bit of Spanish. In fact, it's about 10 years ago. I was basically fluent because I had a lot of projects in Latin America. And when you have to use it, it actually gets pretty good. But long or the short, I flew to this client in South America. And basically got an INI file that saved their entire company. Because what had happened was the two servers were deployed from, I don't know, 12 years ago.
Yeah.
And I'm like, where's the tape drive? And like, we sold it.
Oh.
Okay. The other server, what was the primary, has been parted out and moved over to the secondary as things start failing, right? And I look at the secondary server and two hard drives have failed and one of them is on predictive failure blank.
Okay.
And they had no backup and they were one predictive failure drive away from losing their entire business. But when it came down to it, if I got this one file, which was basically a linear database of sorts, I could save their business. So I flew to deep South America to get an INI file and to save a company's business. Oh man, did I look like the hero. And we stole a PC to, duct tape something up for the short term. And, wasn't my best work for a while, but then came back later with a proper solution, modernized data center and all, but industrial deployments like that, those are hard.
Yeah.
Right. But, I got stories like that for days.
Well, we don't have to share them all today, but that is a more interesting one, how a simple, just recovery of an INI file can be the tipping point from just going out of business.
It saved their company. I mean, it was crazy. They were so grateful. They gave me a bottle of a very expensive rum that actually I was afraid to drink because it was just so expensive.
Yeah.
And I found a way to buy it in the U.S. So I was like, okay, well then I will drink it. And it was good.
Yeah.
It was very good. But yeah, it's like great when you deliver technology that just really connects to someone like that. But I got stories.
We all got stories. I was digging through my notes that I've written up a long time ago. And so relating to the Celsius to Fahrenheit issue, the notes that I had taken, because I'm a diligent note taker, is that the room spec requirement was not to get above 68 degrees Fahrenheit. That's the way it was written.
Whoa. So that's like, you're not supposed to get over like 18 Celsius or something like that.
So you can imagine there was no air conditioning installed in this place. And this was a much smaller operation.
20 Celsius. That's close.
Yeah. So you can imagine that it got a little hot in there.
Yeah. What's funny is I actually have my phone set to metric system I actually am pretty good with temperature.
Yeah.
In distance, but I haven't yet quite got kilograms.
Yeah.
There's a couple easy things like 28 is 82.
Yep.
So that's an easy one to remember. 30 is just hot, because it gets like above 86 or something like that. And then 68 is 20. I just double checked that. I thought it was about 18. So it was close. Right. But, metric system for Celsius is not bad, but the weird thing is about the UK is they're very selective on what parts of the metric system they use.
They drive in miles per hour and they weigh in stones and
I don't know. Yeah. Which is funny. Cause I think the, what we use in the US for what we call imperial system, it started there, but like mm-hmm. selectively they haven't kept it, right? Yep. But actually, funny story about the UK. I guess it's not really the UK. It was their driving style of driving on the mm-hmm. left or the correct side of the road. Have you ever driven on that side of the road?
Not in the UK, but I have driven. It was over in Europe for a little bit.
So I drove in Ireland on the correct side of the road, the mm-hmm. left side of the road.
That's where I've done it.
It was pretty easy, but the first time I probably should have paid the extra money to get an automatic.
Went manual too?
Yeah, it was one of
them. Oh, I didn't do manual.
But like, I love driving stick.
So do I.
I can do it.
But right? I can't. Yeah, so that.
The other foot, it was so weird.
Yeah.
Oh, it took me a while, but I got it. My wife was petrified the entire time.
Little herky-jerky. But
I remember I just drove like for 10 minutes around the parking lot of the car hire place. I'm just like, okay, and I got it.
Yeah.
We made no incidents to report.
Yeah, keeping the gear. I love driving sticks too. I haven't done it in a while, but I do love it. And I can imagine that being like, I definitely drove an automatic. I clear as day remember them because I didn't pick out the car, but they said, "You're an American. We're giving you an automatic." And I said, I remember getting an argument because I'm like, I can drive a stick. And they said, no, you're not driving a stick here because everything is backwards for you. And I was like, okay.
So, well, you also have like this baby face, you know, you're probably close to my age, but like you just look young. So that,
let's see, I was 20,
yeah,
28, right. maybe 27. So this was 7-8 years ago, something like that.
I was 40 when it happened. So, I mean, the funny thing was it's the weirdest thing to explain, but like, once you're driving, it just clicks mm-hmm. and you're okay with it, you know. And luckily in Ireland, I felt it was relatively easy. Most of our driving was yep. out of Dublin, and there's not really huge giant cities beyond that, you know. Yeah. So it was really from the airport in Dublin, and that's all the city driving we did, right? So it was very, very easy. It just, those first 10 minutes around the parking lot, I was like, okay, I think I can do this. And
that's awesome.
And then you just like click in, and it's almost weird to come back the other way. It's yeah. even though I've been driving forever, but just, you just get it. And every now and then, even like now, I was getting on the road somewhere and I'm like, which side was it? Maybe I'm losing my mind. I don't know.
Well, it is 2020. It wouldn't be the first thing or the worst thing to happen this year. But Rick, we very much appreciate you taking time out of your July, middle of July, I should say, and hanging out with us and talking war stories and everybody else. We'll be back, next month, and August should be a little bit more packed than, say, July.